Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything's Canon, a CineLinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Sarah Suk all about her debut novel, Made in Korea, which is a rival to lovers story about two entrepreneurial Korean-American teens, Valerie Kwon and Wes Young, who butt heads while running competing Korean beauty businesses at their high school. Teen drama is definitely a big part of this book, but at the heart of Made in Korea is family. Now, we don't get to choose who we are related to, but we find ways to love them nonetheless. Sarah's love of her culture also shines very bright as she deals with Korean diaspora with a thoughtfulness and emotional resonance. We talk about the excitement of releasing a debut novel, Korean culture and her work with the nonprofit group Liberty in North Korea, how this book almost went down a different path, Made in Korea, of course, and much, much more. While this is a non-spoiler discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. This, of course, should be done all year long. Also, if you didn't know, May is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, so please support AAPI authors any way you can, boosting them online, buying their work. Also, that kind of support shouldn't end May 31st, so try to support AAPI authors all year long. Lastly, I'd like to mention a new virtual book fest that is happening June 11th to 13th. Pride Book Fest is holding its inaugural event and is looking to celebrate LGBTQ+ authors and books. And when I say they have just about everybody, I mean they have just about everybody. You can find them on Instagram and on Twitter at Pride Book Fest, all one word. Okay, Sarah Suk lives in Vancouver, Canada. A great place to live. I was born out there. We'll talk about that. Where she writes stories in Myers Mountains. She graduated from the University of British Columbia with a major in English Lit and a minor in creative writing. Her previous jobs include making bubble tea, teaching creative writing workshops, and interning with Liberty in North Korea in their Seoul office, something I definitely want to talk about. When she's not writing, you can find her hanging out by the water, taking film photos, or eating a bowl of bingsu. If anyone doesn't know what that is, it's kind of shaved ice with lots of flavory goodness on it. Her favorite ice cream flavor is mint chip. She prefers tea over coffee, and she loves winter the best, like a good Canadian, and even though it's cold and gets dark at 4 p.m. She's here today to talk about her debut novel, Made in Korea, which is being described as Frankly in Love meets Shark Tank in this feel-good romantic comedy about two entrepreneurial Korean-American teens who butt heads and maybe fall in love while running competing Korean beauty businesses at their high school. Please welcome to the show fellow British Columbian, Sarah Suk. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. Even though we're sort of in the transition, I'm still in this automatic mode where I want to say, you know, I hope you and your family have been safe and healthy during this pandemic and continue to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. I hope the same for you. You mentioned we're fellow British Columbians. Are you in BC?
I am not currently, but I was born on Vancouver Island. And my brother was, I have two older brothers. The middle one was born in Vancouver and the oldest one was born in White Rock.
Okay. So we share the same roots.
Yeah. So I've been in Ontario for a bit now, but my wife's family's all on the island still. So we actually go back there quite a bit, but not during the pandemic, of course, but.
Yeah, oh man, I heard Ontario is still in lockdown.
It is till the 20th, but now we're hearing they might extend it. So I don't know. We just can't get our act together out here. I don't know. Our the emergency rooms are full. The hospitals are full. They're having to move patients around to sort of like northern parts of the province that have room in their emergency wards and stuff. Like it's not going as well as it should be. But, you know, I think this, we don't want to get too political, but this government just made too many mistakes early on. And, you know, we're having it's just slow federally getting the vaccines out. And have you had any vaccines yet?
I have not gotten any myself. My parents, who are in their 60s, just got their first dose about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Okay. So
slowly happening, but yeah, I don't think any of us will be fully vaccinated until the end of the year, maybe fall or winter. That's what it looks looking like.
That same. I just got my first one last week, and I'm anticipating not getting the second one for a while. Mm-hmm. I think the only reason I got the first one was like I work at a power plant. That's my full time job, so okay. You know, we're sort of essential. Like obviously we need electricity. So, yeah. So I think that's the only. Other than that, but. Yeah, it's slow going, but finally. But anyways, it's good to hear that you've managed to avoid any. What is the cases in BC right now? I actually haven't even looked in a long time. You guys doing okay there? Or?
I mean, it's definitely not great. We're not in as full lockdown as Ontario.
Yeah.
So stores are still open. Restaurants are open for takeout only. No dine-in at the moment.
Okay.
But bookstores are open, like I can go in. There's just like a limited number of people that can go in at a time.
See, that's amazing because, you know, especially for a debut author, one of the boxes you want to check is seeing your book on a shelf in a bookstore.
Yes.
That's such a huge part of it, right? So, and I did see you online the other day. It was so great. You were signing books at Kids Book.
Yeah, so that's the local indie in Vancouver. They're a local bookstore, and they got my copies a little bit early.
Yep.
So I went in and signed them, and I got to talk to the booksellers, got to see it go up on the shelf. It was just very, very cool, and I'm so glad I got to have that experience in the midst of the pandemic.
So are they for sale there now, or they just got them in early so you could sign them?
They are for sale at...
Oh, that's good.
Now, so they're up a little bit early, and then it will be released everywhere next week on May 18th.
That's one of the, like I said, one of the big moments, right? There's always the unboxing when you get your first comic, you know, first arcs, and then the first time you see it on the shelf. That must have been a pretty nice moment for you. The way they tweeted it made it sound like. Did you used to work there?
I did used to work.
Okay,
there.
So. How's that for a character arc? go from working there. Did you ever think when you were working there that you'd be there signing your own books?
I mean, I dreamed. I don't know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
I dreamed of it one day. You know, I would, while I was working, I would go into that young adult section and be like, if I ever got published, my book would be right here.
That's amazing. And how long ago was that you worked there?
It was actually a few years ago now. I can't remember the exact year. It was either 2018 or 2019.
But it's the same owners and stuff, though, yeah?
Yeah, same owners.
So okay.
Some turnover in staff, but there were still lots of people that I recognized, which was fun when I went in. And yeah, I think it was actually 2018 when I worked there.
Okay. So the owners were there, are they? And then they must have been pretty happy about the whole thing too, I imagine.
Yeah, well, the owners weren't in at the moment because they're working from home.
Okay.
But I got to meet the other booksellers that I used to work with and meet the new manager. So that was fun. I think it was fun, or I'm not sure if she's the manager, actually. She might be, but she was the one kind of organizing the book signings and getting me set up. So it was nice to connect with people there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's talk about coming full circle, eh? That's really cool. The pictures look really nice too. It looks like a really nice bookstore there. So Kids Book in Vancouver for everybody out there. If you want a place to buy it early, I guess so you can go there and get it early. Although by the time they hear this, it'll be out. But so one of the cool things about, like I said in your bio there, was that you used to intern for Liberty in North Korea.
Yes.
In Seoul, right? Were you in Seoul? Like when you mean in Seoul, you mean in Seoul.
South Korea.
Yeah. So I'd never heard of this group before. So I did a bit of reading on it, went to their website and stuff. But what you tell us, what's Liberty in North Korea?
Yeah. So Liberty in North Korea is a nonprofit and they do work with North Korean refugees. So they do a couple different things. They help North Korean refugees kind of make the journey through China and Southeast Asia into South Korea. So just give a little bit of context, people who want to leave North Korea obviously can't just cross over into South Korea because of the border and the heavily guarded border. So they can't just like waltz over. And they also can't just leave the country freely either. So they have to escape from the country. Mm-hmm. And they usually go through the border between North Korea and China. So they'll escape into China. And then Liberty in North Korea does work in kind of helping helping them in their journey into South Korea. And then they also do a few different things. They have an office in Los Angeles, I believe. So they have their headquarters based in the States, and they do a lot of work around changing the narrative about North Korea, because a lot of the media we get about North Korea is very focused on the politics and Kim Jong-un and the political family and like the missiles and kind of all of that propaganda about North Korea. And while that is definitely part of, you know, North Korean news and what's happening there, there are so many stories of North Korean people that are so powerful and don't get nearly as much media recognition or nearly as much recognition just overall. I think most people, when you say North Korea, the first thing they think of is like nuclear missiles or, you know, or a thing or like political prison camps or things like that. And while those are super important things to know about, Link does a lot of work around putting the spotlight on the North Korean people, because they truly believe that the North Korean people are the ones who are going to change North Korea. And we are just here to help accelerate that change. So they do a lot of work on empowering North Korean refugees, creating different programs for those who have left and are resettling in either South Korea or the States, and kind of on a broader scale, doing work around like social media and campaigns to let other people know how they can be a supportive ally in this cause.
It's a really cool thing. And yeah, I mean, you know, to your point, there's no country in the world where its entire population agrees with its leadership, mm-hmm. right? And that's whether they're, you know, autocratic, crazy people or, you know, or otherwise, whatever. So, but yeah, it's tricky. You know, we have this Western gaze, right? Where it happens a lot with the Muslim community as well, right? Where they're vilified so much in Western media, certain Western media anyways. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really great that there's groups shining a light and giving attention to, you know, the people in North Korea who want things to change for the better, or, you know, in whichever way, and they're looking for, you know, a better life for whatever reason. And yeah, that's great to hear that there's groups doing that. And it was really cool that you helped in some small way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was definitely very impactful. I love the work that they do, and I am still a huge supporter. And yeah, I think I really believe in that mission of freedom for North Korea in our lifetime, and supporting North Korean people who are at the forefront of that change. And yeah, it's just like it's a really big privilege to be part of that, even in a small way.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I just read a really weird thing about North Korea recently. It's actually, I'm an atheist, and this is really by default, but it's the most atheist country in the world because of the oppressive rulership, right? Because it's this authoritarian thing, and they all, you know, the focus is on one man, one family, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't really want people to worship any other gods. You know what I mean? So it's like in this weird indirect way, it ended up being the most atheist country in the world. It's kind of a weird fact. I just read that recently. But anyways, so that's really cool. That's libertyinnorthkorea.org. If anybody's interested in helping out, it's, I guess, well, there's nowhere in Canada that I guess we can help out, but you could donate money or help in some way. Yeah. So like we said at the beginning here, this is your debut novel, and that's a big deal. I mean, every novel is a big deal, but the debut one is special. It's unfortunate that it's during a pandemic. Because normally you'd be packing right now, maybe getting ready to go on the road, do some in-person events. So you probably won't be doing any of those, I imagine, unless you do. I know. Is there anything planned? What do you got planned for the release?
Well, definitely no packing bags, other than my purse with my hand sanitizer and my.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It is definitely very different launching a book in a pandemic. Although I say that, but it's hard to really know for me because this is my debut novel, as you said. I've never had the experience of launching a book outside of a pandemic, so I don't necessarily have anything to compare to other than other people's experiences that I've seen before. But because I didn't experience that myself, I can't really compare solidly. So yeah, in that sense, I don't really know what I'm missing out on or what could have been. But what I do have planned, like I mentioned before, we talked about already, I went into kids' books to sign books, which was really fun. I hope that I can go into other bookstores and do some signings too, just to have those copies available for anyone who buys them in store. And I have a couple of fun things planned just for like Instagram and online things on the day of, which I think will be fun. And yeah, just a lot of virtual events and then bookstore drop-ins, I guess.
You know, I've talked to more established authors and I've asked them that question. They're like, during the pandemic, you're like, who's hurt more by this, debut authors, authors that don't know any better or authors that do know better, right? And they all say they feel bad for debut authors because it's just a really big deal, right? It's your first book and you know, it's, you never get this moment again, right? You could end up releasing 30 more novels in your life, you know, God willing, fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. But you'll never get back the experience of the first one, right? So right. I'm not trying to make you feel bad about the situation. You're like, Jesus, this interview is shitty. But it sucks, but maybe because you don't know any better, you don't know what you're missing. But yeah, no, it's too bad. But it sounds like you got some fun stuff planned anyways.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of both for sure, like a sense of it would have been really cool, obviously, to meet other authors in person more. And
meeting the readers is a big part of it. That's,
yeah, I would love to do that. And yeah. I hope that I will get to do that one day.
Yep.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, listen, there's nothing to stop you from holding an event at a bookstore later on when it's fully open and yes. Right, a book signing and stuff like that. So you can do that anytime. Mm-hmm. So yeah, getting your first book published is a long road anyways, for most. I know some sort of have lightning strike, but just let's go back in time a little bit here. Talk about sort of when this story came into your head and was this the first story that you ever queried, or like, did you experience rejection at all with other ones or?
Oh yeah, totally. A lot of rejection.
Yeah.
Started querying. So with the first book I ever wrote was actually a middle grade fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. So it was quite different than Made in Korea.
Right.
And that's the first book I wrote. I wrote it over the span of a couple years. So it took a while for me to learn how to write a book, to critique it. I worked with critique partners and we kind of got it into queryable shape. So I sent it out into the query trenches. And that was quite a journey for me in a way. In some ways it was very fast, in some ways it felt very slow. So I started sending out queries and I kind of sent them in batches. So I sent them in a few batches at a time. I sent out a batch, would get feedback, make any tweaks if the feedback was consistent, send it back out again, and so on and so forth. And I did that for several months. And I got a couple full requests. I got a number of full requests, but it just never really turned into anything. It always ended up in rejection. So it was like one rejection after another. So after about, I want to say around 4 months, I decided I would stop sending queries. So I was like, I think I'm done. I've kind of sent it to everybody I would be interested in working with. And the feedback hasn't really been fruitful at this time. So I decided to shelve the manuscript and not send out any new queries. And I just told myself, I'll just get all the responses that I'm still waiting for, but I'm not going to send out anything new. Uh-huh. So that was that. And then kind of around the 7 month mark from the day I sent my very first query, I got an email from an agent who was like, hey, I just read your query and your pages, sample pages. Is this manuscript still available? And I was like, yeah, it's still available. But I think at that point I felt kind of like a little jaded, I guess, or a little bit like, you know, I know how this ends. I know what the full request, how it'll go, but I sent it anyway. And then a week later, she emailed me while I was at the library. I was at the library, like working on a new manuscript. And she emailed me and said, I really love this book. Are you free for a call? And that was really mind blowing for me because at that point, as I mentioned, I had spent 7 months kind of in the query world and I had already put the manuscript out of my mind and thought like, okay, this is over for it. And I was working on something new, but it felt almost like this agent kind of like stepped in and gave it a second chance. Uh-huh. That was really it was just really unexpected. And because of that, it just felt like such a gift. I think either way, it would have felt that way, but even more so because of that time period.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of getting it in front of the right person.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it took a while, but at the same time, you know, 7 months is long and short. I think it's a long and short time.
When you're getting no's, it's a long time.
Yes, if you're getting no's, it's a really long time.
Yeah. you're like 7 months feels like fucking forever. It's just like, oh my God.
It does. It felt very long. And that the agent that I ended up offering and that I signed with, she wasn't the very first query I sent, so it didn't take her 7 months to reply
or
anything.
Right.
But the duration of the time that I was there was that long. And then we signed, which was awesome. And she was so great, still continues to be great. And we revised the middle grade novel together and then went out on submission with it.
Nice.
And fortunately, it didn't sell. We went out for quite a long time as well, but it was like one rejection after another, just like kind of rolling in. A lot of almost, but not quite. Like it was that kind of book.
Yeah.
And that was really hard. I almost felt like, because my agent had offered on it after I thought it was already shelved, I felt like I had blown my second chance in a way, because I was given this opportunity to bring the manuscript back and it just ended up dying on submission. So in a way, I felt like I had kind of blown it in a way. I think logically I knew in my mind that I could always go back to this book one day. It's a timing thing. There's so many other factors, and you know, the best thing I can do is to work on something new. So logically in my head, I knew all those things, but it doesn't take away the sting of it still, you know, and like the many rejections that rolled in. So during that whole period, I think I amassed maybe like close to 100 rejections.
Yeah. Well, listen, when Made in Korea comes out and you're a huge international bestseller, they're going to be begging you for that middle grade fantasy. I'm telling you, don't worry. So keep it. Don't throw it out. Make sure you keep it.
Yeah, I definitely want to revisit it one day. I think even though I feel like a different writer now than I was when I wrote that book, I think there's pieces of that story that I love so much and that I want to try and revive in a different format maybe. So definitely still holding that in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
But while it was on submission, while I was kind of in submission hell, as I had fondly referred to it at the time, I started working on a new book. And this was Made in Korea. And I always knew that I wanted to write both middle grade and young adult. And I love fantasy and contemporary. So this just happened to be my young adult contemporary idea. And it was a story about two teens selling Korean beauty products at school and going head to head to outsell each other. And I started writing that. And we went out on submission with it. We sent it out to an editor. And I was at the same library that I was at when I got that email from my agent asking for a call. I was there when my agent called me and she said, "Sarah, we got an offer on Made in Korea." And I was like, "What?" Whispering because I was like in the library. I was like, "What? Are you serious? is this real?" And I remember just like pacing back and forth between the bookshelves, like half whispering, half like yelling. I was like, "Oh my God, like I can't believe we got an offer." I think because exact same feeling as when I was querying, because it had been such a long time on submission with the other book and feeling really discouraged by it.
Yeah.
When the offer did come from Made in Korea, it felt so surreal. And like, I feel like I'm dreaming it almost, or I can't believe this is happening. I never thought it would happen, but it's happening. And now I'm in the library and I want to scream, but I can't. So I like immediately packed up my bag afterward, stepped outside of the library, and I just started bawling.
Of course. Yeah.
Much because it was so emotional.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sale, but all of the things leading up to the sale and all of the rejections leading up to it, I think it just really felt like, I don't know, it just felt like a window was opened and all this fresh air came in almost. So it was a really wonderful moment. And
I'm getting emotional. You're telling the story so well. Well, it's called, listen, they call it dreams come true for a reason, right? Like there's, you put so much of yourself into this process. And I'm really, really, really obviously glad, you know, selfishly, because we get the book, but that all, you know, that process didn't discourage you, you know, because the list of people who left entirely because of rejections, who quit, is long.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, there's all these great stories we're never going to get, right? Because of that process, is harder on some people than it is on others. And very happy that it didn't, you know, it was discouraging, I'm sure, but not to the point where it ever made you want to quit. It doesn't sound like, anyways.
Yeah, thank you. I think it really helped you to follow other authors' journeys, who they were very open about their process and their rejections and kind of all the bumps along the road that they encountered, because it almost set me up to believe that rejection is normal and to be expected, which I think is true. I think that's true.
It's the norm, right? It's not these people that, like, you hear stories of somebody like, you know, wrote something, sent it out on Friday. By Monday, they had a book deal and they were doing great. Like, that's not normal. Yeah. That's not normal.
Rejection is totally normal.
Yeah.
Discouragement is totally normal. All of that, like the hardships and ups and downs, like that's totally normal. And I think that helped set me up a lot in terms of persevering, because, you know, it was tough, but I knew that it's supposed to be tough. Like, this is, it means that I'm on the right track.
Well, to those people out there that turned you down for those 7 months, fuck you, all right? We don't need you. We don't need you. We're good. We're fine. So I'm curious, you know, this Maiden Cree is it's a story about family, right? First and foremost, for sure. I'm just curious what your family thought of the book.
Oh, what my family thought of the book. Yeah, my sister read an early copy and she loved it. She immediately started fan casting it right away. Like, who could play Valerie and Wes in the movie adaptation?
Of course she loves it. Samantha's a great character. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course the older sister likes it. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
She really loved it. I also gave an early copy to my brother and parents as well. And my dad read it, and he just sent me a message on Kakao Talk, which is like a messaging app that we use, like texting. And then he just sent me a message and was like, wow, like, this book was so well written. Like, I just finished it. It was so good. Sent me all these like emojis. And, you know, that was very validating for me. I didn't grow up hearing a lot of that kind of thing from my parents, like words of affirmation and praise. So it was like, I took a screenshot because I was like, I need to remember this moment when my dad said this great thing about something I did. And then I remember like talking to him on the phone like a week or so later, and I was like, oh, like, Appa, so you read the book and you loved it. Like, oh, you really liked it, huh? And he was like, yeah, he told you I did.
Yeah. The moment's over.
The moment is over. The moment has passed.
Tell me about your next book.
So they have always been just like very supportive of the whole Maiden Cree process. I remember, I think my dad was really surprised, not because he didn't think I could do it, but because I guess he was just impressed by the fact that I said I would do it, and I said I was going to be an author ever since I was a kid. Like, that was what I said I wanted to be.
Right.
And I think he was just like, oh, she said she was going to do it and she did it. And I think that was both surprising and impressive for him. But I'm very fortunate in that my family has been very excited about Maiden Korea. They've been really supportive and excited with me. So it's been really fun to share this whole thing with them.
That's really great. And we'll get to the book in one sec, but did you, you know, share any of that process with them? Like what we just talked about, you know, like the months of rejection and how hard it is. And
they know
about all that. You're close enough with them that you share all that with them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, not too much, like not always in detail and whatnot. I think my relationship with my parents is that I would consider us close, but we're not necessarily like, we don't talk about our feelings a lot, or like we don't talk about our everyday lives a lot. It's just like, I would just consider us close, but not always like divulging a lot of the details or like sitting in that a lot. So for example, even when I shared about the rejections per se, like, oh, I got another rejection for my book today. I feel kind of sad about it. They're both my mom and dad were very like, well, that's what it is.
Get over it.
It's what it is. Like, what did you expect? And, you know, on the flip side, they were never like, oh, when's the book coming out? Both of them were more in the camp of like, of course, this kind of thing takes a long time. Like, you need to expect it to take a long time. And, you know, yeah, so they, in that sense, it helped, but.
Right. Yeah. They seem a little like sort of just like grounded, I guess, like where, you know, just trying to keep your head not above the clouds, below them.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very grounding. They're like, what did you expect it to be like?
I want you to burn down the publishing house for me. I want you to hug me and tell me I'm the best. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not like that at all.
No, that's all right. That's okay. That's all right. They sound great, and that's fine. They sound oddly similar to the parents in this book. supportive, but you know, not supportive with food, not with the hugs and the kisses.
Yeah.
Okay, Made in Korea. What's it about? Tell me.
Made in Korea is about two teenagers, Valerie Kwon and Wes Jung, that are selling Korean beauty products at school. Valerie is trying to raise enough money to take her Harmony, which is her grandma, to Paris, her dream city, while also trying to prove to the rest of her family what she can do, she's capable of. While Wes is trying to make enough money to cover his music school tuition that his parents will not support. They do not support this dream of his. And so they are selling these products at school to fund their individual dreams. And they're competing to outsell each other. But, you know, they run into some issues when they maybe sort of possibly fall in love along the way.
We're not going to say what happens, but this is a rivals to lovers romance for sure. Mm-hmm. Is that your favorite trope? Is that your favorite romance trope, or what, do you have a favorite or a least favorite?
Oh man, it's so hard to choose. In some ways, yes, rivals to lovers, or a more extreme like enemies to lovers. I love those stories, but you know, I have a soft spot for friends to lovers. And also like the fake dating trope. I mean, it's like impossible to choose because I feel like every book does it so differently. So I just enjoy all of them.
My favorite is fake dating. Absolutely my favorite. And my least favorite is second chance.
Oh, okay.
You don't get a second chance with me, Sarah. Once you screw it up, that's it. You've had your shot. And I've read some really good fake dating ones this year. And like Adiba Jerkadar's Hanyu and Ishu's Guide to Fake Dating is coming out soon.
I can't wait to read that one.
It is like lights out great. It is so great. If you like the Henna Wars, it's just like, you know, it's better than the Henna Wars. It's so great. And Adiba's fantastic. And it's fake dating in that one. It is so good. I love fake dating. I'm with you though too about the friends to lovers. I'm fine with just like happy at the beginning, happy at the end. You know what I mean? Like enemies to lovers to me sometimes is just a little bit too you know, sometimes I just want people that are in love from day one and you know, see that through all the way to the end. Sometimes you just want that, right? But you can still, if you write it well, you can still have conflict and drama and all that great stuff. This is a good rivals to lovers though. I did enjoy this one, and it's, you know, the setting is great because high school is so, I mean, just, you know, emotions are high already, and it's so competitive, right, in so many ways already, and it's such a great setting for this, for rivals to lovers, I think, in so many ways. So I think it was a really great choice you made. A big part of this story is you know, diaspora, right? Sort of fitting in, finding your way, you know, as a Korean, maybe not necessarily trying to fit in, but just sort of like, identity and all that stuff. And there's a great line in it that I really love, where it says, the mother says, did we immigrate all the way here just so we can wear other people's clothes? Now, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, it's kind of a funny line, but it's a serious line too. Like, she's being serious, right? It's not a, the mom doesn't mean it as a joke, but that was an interesting line. And I really enjoyed that part where the parents were like, you know, we gave up a lot to come here. And, you know, we came here to give you specifically a better life. And we don't want you thrifting. Was there any of that true life stuff for you there? Was that taken from your own life at all? Like, how was growing up for you? I know you were born in Canada, but how was that? Was there any of that? I'm not going to say guilt from your parents, maybe guilt's not the right word, but you know what I mean? Did that ever come up when you were growing up?
Right. I was born in Canada. But my family, I would say, is very Korean, in the sense that, like, very traditional. And I grew up speaking Korean with them, so we spoke Korean in the home. In some ways, I would say I pulled from my own experiences in writing Valerie's family and Wes's family. Although I would say no one character is meant to be an exact parallel of anyone from my own life. Like, Valerie's sister is very different than my own sister. And, you know, both Valerie and Wes's parents are quite different than my own parents. But there are definitely a few things sprinkled in there, like details sprinkled in there, that are reminiscent of things that I heard growing up. The thrifting thing is a big one. My mom hated it. She hated it when I went thrift shopping. She'd be like, oh, I want you to wear your own clothes. Or, like, I want you to, you know, not feel. I guess I think it was like, I just don't want you to feel like you need to wear secondhand clothes, you know. And she never said, like, why we didn't come here so that you could do this or anything like that. Like, I didn't really grow up hearing a lot of, like, we came here for you, like, having that messaging really be strong or explicitly said anyway. But I think she just didn't like that I was thrifting and doing that. I think she would prefer that I, you know, got things for myself that are, like, my own. So that was a little bit inspired from my parents. And yeah, I don't know. I think it was interesting in the sense that, like, for Wes, his parents are very adamant about being against being a musician. That's Wes's dream. He wants to be a musician.
Yeah, the dad especially is not stoked about it.
Very against it. And my parents were never really against me wanting to be an author, which is similar in the sense that it's an artist's career. But they were never against it. They never said, like, you can't do that. And I think my dad was actually really strict about grades in high school. He was, like, a very, very, very strict parent. But then as soon as I graduated high school and went into university, he became a lot less strict. I think it was, like, he just really wanted me to go somewhere. He just, like, wanted me to have some kind of direction. And then once I kind of, like, started post-secondary education, I think he got a lot more hands off. So that was, I would say, a lot of my parents' attitude about things was, like, okay, like, you do your thing. They weren't necessarily supportive per se, but they weren't unsupportive, if that makes sense. They
never said, no, it does, for sure. We do this less in Canada than the States, but, you know, when we go to after high school, when we choose college, university, it's usually fairly close to home. Like, Canadians don't go out of province too much. Not like people in the States, they go out of state all the time.
I have some friends go out of province, but the majority of my friends, we all stayed in BC. I went to a BC school. I went to UBC.
Yeah, that's right. And was that the plan all along? Or did you even think of you know, going anywhere else? Or
no, you know what? I kind of regret this now, because I was like, what if it didn't work out? But I literally only applied to UBC.
I love the confidence.
I like only applied to UBC. I had no plan B. And, you know, even when I think about my career choice, because I always knew, like, I want to be an author. So, like, when I think about it now, I'm like, wow, I'm so glad this worked out, because I had no plan B. Like, I just don't know what I would have done for a career.
Your counselor at high school was like, you need a backup school. Like, you need a backup. Come on, give me a backup school. Yeah. You're like, I don't know, somewhere else. Yeah.
Just never have a plan B. And I just kind of, like, yeah, even with the job thing, like, I have never had another career, I would say. Like, I've had I do a lot of like side jobs. So I guess I learned this term called gig economy, where you kind of bounce from contract to contract or like short-term jobs to support whatever you're doing. And that's what I do.
That's the future of the planet, by the way.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Gig economy. Yeah. You watch. You know, in the next 20, 30 years, you're going to see a lot of that.
Interesting. Yeah, that's me. That's me. That's kind of like what I...
You're ready.
What I'm doing. And always like juggling multiple jobs, but...
Yeah. Especially as we get more... that's because that's tied into like machine learning and more automation.
Right.
Coming.
Right.
I firmly believe that, but that's a different discussion for another day. It's not necessarily a happy discussion either, but once the machines are active, I think we're all screwed. But well, that's, you know, the thing about having a plan B is if you have a plan B, you end up using it, I think, just because it's there. Like, I don't think, you know what I mean? I like the idea of having one option and putting everything you've got into it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of like, because I think if you have that plan B sitting there, a part of you is going to be like, well, I, you know, can do this because I've always got a plan B.
Right.
That's sort of like, this is a terrible thing to say, but that's like a losing attitude, maybe, in a way. Like, mm-hmm. pick something you're passionate about and give it your all, I think is a good way to be. But mm-hmm. In non-life or death situations I'm talking about. Like, don't go climb a mountain without a plan B.
Yeah,
yeah,
you always have a plan B for
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess just to close about my thoughts about the family dynamic, still very much inspired in terms of feelings, I guess, and experiences versus like direct parallels or direct experiences or anything. So it wasn't like that, but it was definitely a lot of things I felt as a teenager, Valerie and what I'm feeling in the book.
Okay. A lot of the times these, you know, we talked about this, these sort of YA romance books, we know the ending, the covers usually give it away. You don't even have to know what the book is about. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being about, the journey becomes even more important, right, in these books. When there's a certain predictability to the ending, so the journey becomes that much more important. And, you know, in a case like this, it's like we said, it's rivals to lovers. So, you know, when you were outlining this story or coming up with it, you know, did you have the ending in mind already? Did you start, you know, some people write backwards, right? I'm just wondering how you plotted this story and knowing, you know, how important the journey aspect of this book is. You know, did you sort of, where was your focus? More on the ending or more in the middle parts?
Right. It was interesting because in the very, very, very beginning, like when I sat down and started just brainstorming what I wanted the book to be, it was originally not a romance. Hmm. Right. So it was just like a teen competition that ended with like, mutual respect, and that was it.
what's romantic about mutual respect? Nothing.
It was ended with like a begrudging mutual respect.
You can't, Sarah, you can't make out with mutual respect, all right? Like, you can't.
But yeah, I was like, yeah, it's not gonna be a romance, like this is just what it's gonna be. And like, I wrote some sample chapters, and you know, and then I showed it to my critique partners. And they're like, so they're just not going to get together. You're kind of setting it up for that. Like, the way you're setting up the story is like, they're going to get together in the end. And I was like, really? That's interesting. And like, even as I was writing it, it was like so clear that the characters wanted to be together. It was like one of those instances where I felt like the characters knew the book better than I did going in. So it was like, they were telling me like, hey, we're right in front of you. Like, we have this. Yeah. You know, have this relationship right in front of you. We want to be together. And it just kind of came to a point where I was like, you know, who am I to stand in the way of young love? So
I love that, hearing that. I've heard that before from authors where the characters, you know, informed them, told them about the story, you know, made them aware of what was, it's such a great way to write a story too, because that's just clearly, it's a strong story and the relationship is strong. So just like, it's just a natural progression, isn't it, for you, like as a writer, like when Wes and Val are telling you what's going to happen, then you know you've got something good there.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely felt natural that it would happen. It just took me a while, I guess, to see it. They saw it a lot earlier than I did. My partner saw it a lot earlier than I did. So that helps for sure. And I think it was interesting too, because after that piece unlocked, the rest of the story came so much more easily.
Yeah, right.
Than when I was trying to brainstorm it originally. I think the whole mutual respect thing was obviously still a very strong point in their relationship, that I kind of wanted it to do that, for that to be a strong arc for them to come to that place. So I would say, I think after that piece of the about the romance opened up, I think the ending was pretty clear. I had the end scene pretty clear in my head.
Right. It just doesn't sell as good, right? Like, here's Sarah Suk's debut, all about mutual respect.
Would that have been the tagline?
That's the tagline. People would be like, okay. But no, you're right though. It is. I mean, like in any good relationship, there's mutual respect is there. And Valerie's the type of, she's such a self-assured, I mean, I know she's got some stuff going on, but she's a really great, she's very aware of herself. And, you know, I can't imagine her being in a relationship where that baseline isn't mutual respect, right? She's she's such
she
a strong.
She would not stand for it.
She wouldn't, no. She's such a strong personality. There's a lot of great characters in this book. I think my two favorites are Charlie and Pauline. Because Pauline especially. Now, so I was on this, there was this thing earlier this year where I went on this kick and it ended up just being, your book was the last of the three, but in a row, not pretty much in a row, pretty close to in a row, I read Forest of Stolen Girls by June Her, The Mermaid from Jeju by Sumi Han, and then I read your book. So when you mentioned Jeju and the Hanyo Divers, because at that point, so... June got me obsessed with Hanyo Divers. Mm-hmm. So when I read Force of Stolen Girls and I talked to June about it, we talked all about Hanyo and Jeju, and she got to go there to visit. She's from there, right? And so we had a great conversation about the women divers of Jeju Island. And so when you mentioned it in your book, I was so happy. I was so thrilled. And that, of course, is Pauline in the book. This is not really a spoiler. She's a side character, but she ends up going there to, you know, with her dad to visit Jeju because she has dreams of working, you know, something in the ocean anyways, right?
Yes, she loves the ocean.
She does. I think is it marine biology, right? She wants to get into it. Yeah. And so she's great. And Charlie is Valerie's cousin who helps her with, you know, the sales. He's such a funny, I love Charlie. He's a boy after my own heart. You know, he's a lot like me. When I was in high school, I was either crying or trying to impress a girl, but not really great at it. You know what I mean? Like just awful at it. I love Charlie, and I love Charlie and Pauline. And there was like a hint at one point, maybe they would get together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of back and forth with them in the book, and sort of where they end up is interesting. I won't say exactly where, but. You got some great lead characters, right? For sure, with Valerie and Wes, but talk about sort of rounding out the cast, because the parents are fantastic on both sides. Samantha's a great sister. You know, you can't just have two people. It's high school. You have to populate it with a lot of people. So talk about just sort of, you know, surrounding these two main characters with all these great side characters.
Yeah, I loved all of the side characters in the book. And I'm so happy to hear that you loved both Charlie and Pauline. They were so much fun to write, and I think even when I read books, I like always tend to gravitate towards side characters and just knowing what their story is and what are they doing here, and you know, if they had their own spin-off novel, like what would that look like,
right?
So I definitely wanted to give a lot of attention to the side characters and make them feel as fleshed out in their own world, like they weren't just existing for Valerie and Wes's sake, but they have their own lives going on. So that was important for me. I think also one thing that I knew about Made in Korea when I was starting to write it was that I wanted it to be a very unapologetically Korean story. Mm. And what I mean by that is just really embracing different parts of being a Korean diaspora kid and all of its complications and joys and growth.
And having a kimchi fridge.
Yes, having a kimchi fridge. You know, I wrote a lot of this book sitting next to my mom's kimchi fridge.
The food, the like, this, your mouth will water reading this book. I'll say that much for sure.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of that, too. That's like that celebration of Korean culture and food, and family dynamics. Like, I really wanted all of that in there. And another thing that was important for me to include while writing it was very different Korean diaspora experiences. Mm-hmm. Because no one character or even no one book can represent the entire Korean diaspora experience. It's just so different for everybody. So Valerie, you know, was born and raised in the Pacific Northwest, and you know, that's her home base, and that was very similar to me. I was born and raised here in Vancouver, and that's where I am. So that's where I still am. Whereas Wes, he identifies as a third culture kid, so he grew up in Korea, but then moved around a lot to different countries, and then eventually settles in America. And then Pauline is half Korean. So she has kind of her own identity struggles with what that looks like and connecting with Korean culture. And Charlie's dad works in Korea. So he lives just with his mom, and then dad works in Korea and sends back money. So I just really want to show the wide variety of different Korean diaspora experiences, even within one book. And I felt like the side characters really helped me to open up that world all the more. So I really loved being able to do that and having kind of like an ensemble cast in that way. I really, really enjoyed all of those characters and kind of putting in the experiences that I wanted to reflect in the book.
Well, you did that, I think, perfectly well. You really did, I think, give us so many different shades of Korean culture. And there's been a lot of that lately with some other books too, like even like Adiba Jirgadar's books, you know, just like Bengali Muslims. Like, she gives us so many different flavors. It's always great, because I love, of course, when I enjoy a book just out of pure selfishness, right? Just whether it's just escapism or entertainment. But I always love a book when I learn something new about a culture. It makes me a better person. And I did that with this book. So I thank you for that. I really appreciate it. Although I did already know about kimchi fridges. I won't say I learned about that. So really quickly, before we're going to get out of here in a minute or two, but we have to talk about the beating heart of the book, right? Grandma, Halmione. Is that any reflection of your real life grandmother? Or because she's so, Valerie, this whole, you know, scheme is so, because Valerie loves her grandmother so much. She's probably the most important person in her life, isn't she? And everything she does is for her and this dream trip to Paris. Talk about that relationship. And is that a reflection of your relationship with your grandmother at all? Do you have a relationship with your grandmother?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the way that you said it, how Harmony is Valerie's most important person, that's very true. And that's very, very true. Like, she is very much her heart. So for myself, I do not have that kind of relationship with any of my grandparents. So on my dad's side, my grandpa passed away before I was born, so I've never met him. And then my grandma passed away when I was quite young, so I don't have too many memories of her.
That's the same as me. I didn't meet either of my grandfathers. They were both well dead before I was born. Yeah. And my grandmother, both grandmothers died long when I was young too. So yeah, I have little to no memories with either. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that was my dad's side for me. And then on my mom's side, they live in Korea. Mm-hmm. So I was obviously in Canada, so I didn't really see them very often. You know, I went to Korea with my family a few times growing up, but I didn't grow up close to them. But then in university, I spent a semester abroad in Seoul. I went to Korea University. And then during that time, I went to go visit my grandparents every weekend, because I was just so curious about the grandparent-grandchild relationship. I grew up with a lot of friends who were really close with their grandparents. So they would be like, I'm going to just go see my grandma this weekend. Or, oh, like, my grandpa made this food for me. And, you know, it was just so intriguing to me that all of these people in my life had these relationships that I never had. So when I went to go study in Korea, I really wanted to take this opportunity to visit them and get to know them and like have a semblance of a relationship. And that was a really special time, and one that I really treasure still, because shortly after, I think it was the year after my grandfather ended up passing away, and then actually just this past year, my grandma also passed away. So it was just such a short window of time where I could really have any kind of relationship with them.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'm really happy you got that time chance to do that then, for sure. Yeah,
it was definitely very special. But I guess where Valerie and her grandma's relationship came from was like, I think it came from that feeling of like, oh, this is a really special kind of relationship. And I wish I had had that growing up. I know a lot of my friends did and peers did. And I think that that's such a great relationship and so unique and can hold such a special place in your heart. So yeah, it kind of came from like that short opportunity that I had, as well as kind of my longing to have had this kind of relationship when I was a teenager.
Yeah. Little wish fulfillment. And that's great too. And in, as far, you know, as far as the context of the book is concerned, I think Valerie thinks that, you know, her Hermione is the only one who really gets her, like really understands her, and that she's unique and special, and in a way that her parents don't yet anyways. That's a relationship that's going to take some work, right, with Valerie and her parents, especially her mother. But with her grandmother, I think they just have that bond that, you know, that they just, without even speaking, they sort of have this connection, don't they? It's really great. It's really beautiful. And there's some stuff that happens in the book that's, you know, it gets quite emotional, I think. And, you know, it's really great. It's a great relationship. And it is definitely like the beating heart of the book for sure. So, Sarah, I can't thank you enough. I'm so happy for you. Debut book. It's so great. It's such a great book. I know it's going to do well. Comes out May 18th. Is there any, you got any events? What's your launch day event? What do you got going on that day?
So on my launch day, I will be hanging out on Instagram. I'll be posting stories throughout the day, so you can kind of, you know, feel like you're hanging out with me on my launch day, see what I get up to.
Yep.
And then I will also be kind of holding like a photo scavenger hunt activity as well. So I have like, I'll be posting a graphic later today. So by the time this comes out, it will be up.
It'll be out already. Yeah.
It'll be out already. So it will be a photo scavenger hunt where people can just take photos from this list. I have a list of things that you can take pictures of and post it throughout the day. It's all like made in Korea related things, and you can tag me in it. And then I will be hopping on an Instagram live in the evening. I haven't decided quite what time yet, but I'll be hopping on just to chat about the book and the day and all that good stuff. So my handle is Sarah Hedisuk, which is spelled SARAHAELISUK. So everything on launch day is happening there.
All right. Well, that sounds great. I will be tuning in, so I'll see you there. If you, you'll know I'm, it's me. There'll be like the dumbest question you've ever had. That'll be me. Okay. So you'll be, that's Steve. So yeah, have a really, really, you're not going to get any sleep the night before your release day. So I won't even say get some rest, but, you'll be so excited, and definitely try and get some rest after the release day if you can. And, huge congratulations on the debut, and I'm so happy for you. And, I can't wait to see it's going to be great. What, you're probably already working on book two, I imagine. So,
mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Steve. It was so great chatting with you. Thank you for having me.
You as well. There you have it. Another episode of Everything's Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Sarah for taking the time to speak with me today. I had a great time reading Made in Korea, and now that I've met her author, it's only made me a bigger fan. I'm very much looking forward to what Sarah has in store for us. To order a copy of Made in Korea or find out what Sarah has planned for its release, go to sarahsuk.com. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.